closer.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, I use and really highly recommend GoToMyPC to remotely access another computer. You know, maybe you haven't tried GoToMyPC because it's, I don't know, it seems too complicated. But let me tell you something. It's easy to set up, and it's really easy to use. First, all that you have to do is you have to sign up for a free trial. Go to GoToMyPC.com/podcast. And make sure that you're at the computer that you want to access it, download it, and set it up. It takes about 2 minutes. Then from any computer you're at, log in to GoToMyPC.com with your secure password and click the Connect button. You can go to GoToMyPC and get a 30-day free trial. So visit GoToMyPC.com/podcast and check it out. I really highly recommend it. Again, it's GoToMyPC.com/podcast for a free 30-day trial. Hey, it's Andrew Horowitz, and this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me today. We have a very special guest today for episode number 113. A lot of you have written me about him because you're wondering what the heck is going on. You know, you listen to his podcast quite regularly. Many of you are subscribers to his wonderful newsletter. And yet, all of a sudden, poof, he's disappeared. So, you know what? Not only do we have him on today, but I have him actually in here in studio at my office. I'm going to spend the weekend together. Mr. Frank Curzio, how are you, buddy?
How's it going, bud?
It's going well. Hey, listen, a lot of questions being asked. I thought what we'd do is kind of clear up some of the noise out there and talk about things. I promise everybody we'd talk about economics, some stocks, and a whole bunch of things that are going on over the last week. But I thought maybe it would be good, and maybe I'll ask you some questions so that you can kind of explain to people where you are, what's going on. I've gotten people that have written me and said, hey, is Frank working for you? I'm like, what? How'd you get that idea?
You want to go over the rumors first, or do you want to go over what really happened?
Yeah, let's go over the rumors. Let's go over the rumors. Let's kind of dispel
the rumors. Yeah. Actually, some of the things I punched Jim Cramer in the face. That was one of them that I got.
But let's just clarify. It's not true.
That's not true.
Okay. Uh-huh.
No. what else? I'm working for you. You hired me.
Yeah, I hired you. Yeah, you're really my illegitimate son.
People actually said, you're too good for TheStreet.com, so Frank Curzio, you had to leave. It's too bad.
I don't know where they're getting this information from.
I know, I don't know. But do you want the truth?
Yeah, tell me the truth.
They laid me off.
They laid you off?
Yeah, they let me go.
All right, so let's kind of
That simple, right? There's no drama in there.
No drama.
No, but I could tell you that the reason they gave was cost cutting.
All right.
So
let me just kind of, let me restate that. Quote, the reason they gave is quote unquote cost cutting.
Was cost cutting, yes. Right. Which, it comes as a surprise to a lot of people. To me, it wasn't really a surprise. There's a lot going on right now, obviously, that they've, you know, obviously offered me a severance package, which I can't talk about, but let's just say because of the enormous demand from everyone, from the podcast listeners and from the subscribers, which made a lot of money, they actually pretty much took it back and rewrote it and had old non-competes and stuff like that and make sure that, make sure you don't open up another product. So I'm debating whether, what to do right now.
Well,
so,
you know, let me tell you something. Seriously, and you don't have to say anything here, so it's not off limits for you, but you know what? When somebody writes a newsletter, this is my opinion. Again, you don't have to say anything. When somebody's writing a newsletter, basically managing money for you through a newsletter process, you can't just hand that off to somebody else and allow them just to, whoever it is, whether good or bad, by the way, just to take over the reins so easily. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, I'm just telling you, my opinion is if people are utilizing your you know, theories and your picks and your ideas for the newsletter for that particular thing, I just don't understand how that works, where you could just kind of expect people to, you know, kind of hop on board a new writer. But
Again, it's very limited what I could talk about right now. And if you're expecting me to trash TheStreet.com,
No,
I don't mean you, I mean the audience. I have too much integrity for that. Yeah. So I think people know the way Wall Street works. At least that's what we try to explain in our podcast. I hold myself above that. I have nothing against TheStreet. I worked there 3 hard years. I have a lot of great people that work for them. Jim Cramer is a good guy. He's, you know, I see he works every day. You see the emotion behind him when he gets things wrong, and, you know, which means he cares about his job. But, you know, it's different markets. Sometimes people have different opinions, and you know, you just, you know, you do what you have to do. But as far as TheStreet.com and talking negative about them, no, you're not going to see that from me because, as you know, with the podcast, it's more than that. Nobody benefits from anything, and, you know, I just don't want to go that route.
So yeah, I hear you.
The route that I want to go is what's best for my family, and that's what we're negotiating right now. So starting a new business is very difficult.
Yeah, but especially in this environment.
It's a lot of fun, and I love it. So it's pretty cool. The responses are overwhelming. I really appreciate everybody coming out for me. That was very nice. But it's going to be interesting to see over the next couple of weeks. However, I will give my email address to let everybody know how it's going and when the final decision is made, whether I'm going to start a Stocks Under 10 newsletter or other newsletters or you know, the podcast. But there is going to be a decision made within the next 3 weeks.
You know, what we could do is actually have this a little bit as, you know, if you want, I know a lot of your listeners are we have a lot of cross listeners, you and I, on our stuff, you know, because we do a weekly here, you do the daily. And I think that, you know, what we could do is make sure to have, as a central point right now, particularly in this episode, we'll have links to some of the things where you can get in touch with Frank on the email and how you can follow him. For all those people that had, I got a lot of emails actually saying to me, you know, I follow Frank's newsletter. I don't know what to do now. You know, what do I do? And I said, you know what? I can't tell you what to do. You know, you'll have to make a decision when the time comes. So I think that'll be really good if they can get your email and get some advice from you.
My email is curzio1@gmail.com. That's curzio1@gmail.com. Once the 3 weeks is up, you're going to pretty much know everything or know nothing. So that's the choices. So, I mean, it's that simple. It's either you're going to know everything and something that, you know, I do like. The name of the podcast is The Real Story, and I like telling the real deal. So, you know, if it comes down to that, I would like to be open with everything that happened. If it comes down to that, if not, I would just like to, you know, again, do what's best for my family. I know a lot of people out there, Frank, you got to start a new newsletter. We made so much money, or we did this, so you got to start a podcast, or work with Andrew.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know what? Right now, it's about the family. You got to see what you have to do. And I've also had, believe it or not, 3 or 4 job offers already. But if it comes down to that, I think I really will like to start my own business like my father did for me and take that route. But again, it's like negotiations and all the, like, the lawyer garbage and that comes with it. But thank you for the overwhelming response, all the emails. I'm glad all of you got in touch with me. It's great. I have all your contact information because of you, and you know, I will be reaching out to you when the decision is final, which is going to be in about 3 weeks.
All right, great. So let's kind of get into some of the things. You know, you
that's
did daily.
Pretty easy, right?
Yeah, that's pretty easy. Pretty good. I'm good. Let's talk about some of the things that are going on. So, you know, I think that, first of all, you did a lot of coverage of not only the economics, but you did a lot of coverage of individual position stocks, mm-hmm. news. And, you know, one of the things I think you and I have talked about has been just the overwhelming amount of news that's coming out on a global basis. I mean, all day, all night, mm-hmm. it's like nonstop, you know, between China and Japan. Japan says, okay, we love the U.S. bonds, and, you know, Geithner's going to China to tell China, okay, everything's great, and, you know, we got unemployment numbers coming out, and it's good, it's bad, it's very confusing. How do you make heads or tails out of all this now?
You know, I got to tell you, you have to be nuts going 100% long in this market right now, don't you think? I mean, really, you really have to be nuts going 100%. And I'm not saying that it's not going to go higher, but really to go in with no, with just not even worrying at all about the risk of this market and what poses it, and 9.4% unemployment going higher. And I know, you know, there's a lot of people still calling a housing bottom that have been calling it for the last 2 years. But it's just for you to go all in at the market at this level. And in all fairness, the past 3 weeks have kind of been like, you know, take some profits all the way up, let the momentum names ride. But these momentum names eventually, right, have to stop. We're seeing, you know, a little bit for this week where, you know, commodities came back to earth just a little bit. But it's really amazing, like, the moves in these stocks that they continue. And it's nice to see for people that own them. But, you know what, you have to be a little nervous, especially at these levels, because the fundamentals aren't there. It's mostly just the technicals.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we run portfolios, and we've been short and long. And we, you know, try to look for the best long ideas, the best short ideas. And, you know, there are no good short ideas. There have not been, I should say, because it doesn't matter the quality, the fundamentals. It doesn't matter. Everything is just kind of like moving up because it's moving up. The problem, though, is that we don't want to really necessarily get short, even though we wanted to short the retail, even though we want to short some of the casual diners, because the truth is these things just, when they just go, you know, and they're not a 4% move. It's like 10, 12%. And if they do go down one day, they go up the next day. The problem, though, is, you know, even us, we have, you know, 50% or 40% long now, and we're using our cash as our hedge, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. We're using the cash as our component that says, you know what, this is what we don't want in the market. And I got to tell you something, though. Individual positions are still getting a dramatic, I mean, they're moving around like crazy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I agree with you. It's a very tough market. Every time I hear another economic news story that's coming up, I start getting nervous. Like, what's it going to mean? What's it going to say now? What's going to happen?
Does it matter what it says or what it means? No. Because it's always taken as a positive right now, right? Yeah. I mean, really, I mean, unemployment 9.4%. What did we get last week? Remember how much we ran up the Thursday into that Friday?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had 9.4%. What was it? 300, I believe, 45,000. Yep, right. But, you know, you had the birth death, which is over 200, which would have meant it would have been higher than estimates on the claim side.
Right.
But you're looking at that and saying, okay, that's not good. We're still not really seeing the huge decline that we need to see. But yet the markets continue to move higher in anticipation that everything's going to be okay. But, you know, we've talked about this in the past. When it's got to be better than less bad.
It has to
be better than less bad for the stock market to move up from these levels.
Is it possible that we have the eternal carrot in front of us? It's going to be better one day, right?
It would be nice to have that eternal carrot, yeah.
It seems like we do.
But it's just, you know, as guys like us who really focus on the individual investor, it's very difficult at this point to give advice to be 100% long,
mm-hmm.
totally not worrying about the risk, because there are a ton of risks out there, especially with some of these companies where it seems like they're all moving up. There are the leaders in this industry that are getting it right, that are cutting their costs, and some that are beating not only on the earnings side, but on the revenue side that mm-hmm. deserve to go higher. One of the ones with my portfolio, Del Monte, raised estimates. However, the majority of stocks out there are beating on earnings, but not on revenue, so you're not seeing it from the sales. Yet those stocks are participating just as much as the ones that are getting the job done, that are seeing the, you know, the stronger business, which is kind of a scary thought. You're looking at companies trading at 30 times earnings now, 35 times earnings, and the stock movements are the same for the companies that deserve to be trading higher. So it's a very difficult market right now, and yeah, I think it's unfortunately going to be like that going forward. But wouldn't you love to see a pullback?
You know, I'd love to see a pullback, but you know, you wonder what's going to happen at a pullback. And I think one of two things sets up. The first thing that could set up is that the pullback gets really severe because people jump out, especially the top froth that got in, you know, what did you say, last week, you know, yesterday, last 3 weeks, last 4 weeks, you know, that really put the pedal to the metal and said that, you know what, I'll hold on just as long as it doesn't go down, and then I'll pull. That's the first thing, you know, and then it drops to some point that, you know, maybe not that terribly, but somewhere. But there's a whole bunch of people that are waiting for a pullback. And if they're waiting for the pullback, will it ever happen?
Right, but how long does that thesis last, if you think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been saying that for how many weeks? Like, everyone's expecting a pullback. So, you know what? If we keep going higher, it's just common knowledge that more and more people are going to expect a pullback. Does that mean we go up forever? Eventually, there has to be a point where we say, okay, this market's going to pull back to the point where it's trading where, you know, the fundamentals are a little bit in line, I think. But
let me stop you here. Let's talk about fundamentals.
Okay.
Let's say it out loud, that right now, fundamentals do not matter because the idea is that hopefully one day it will get better. Is that a true statement?
That I would agree with that. We're expensive on the S&P right now. We went from average to a little bit on the expensive side right now.
We never got cheap. We never got cheap.
No, you're actually right. We never got cheap. But a lot of companies did put up some solid earnings last quarter. And good for them because of the cost cutting. And unfortunately, that cost cutting came in the fact that
human
employees.
Capital. It was human capital that was cut.
Which I know firsthand. Mm-hmm. But you know, so they say. But we won't go there. But, you know, you're seeing like the dramatic, you know, cost cutting. And management teams are really doing a good job. But however, at the end of the day, there has to be demand. There has to be some kind of demand. And we're at the point where how much can you cut costs before it impacts business? I mean, how many employees can you cut where you have someone, you know, working the register, also, you know, folding the clothes and, you know, answering the telephones? You have to have employees to run the business efficiently. And you know what? It's going to start eating into consumer confidence, customer service. I mean, when customer service goes down, you get less business. So we're at the point right now where we really need to start putting up some strong numbers. And I don't know if we're going to do it the quarter or the next quarter ahead.
Well, here's my idea. Tell me what you think about this, okay? It's a little bit long, but I'm going to shrink it down. You tell me what you think.
Okay.
First of all, let's admit that in the investing world and right now in the business world, panic and euphoria are living kind of together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, what we had was a time when company says, you know what, we're cutting people, we're not buying inventory, we're not buying anything, we're going to cut expenses, we need to cut because we need to not only make our numbers, but, you know, we need to survive here. So that's the first thing. So they don't do anything major, and they kind of let their inventories bleed out, and then all of a sudden they're getting a whiff that, wait a minute, do we have a recovery? We're being told we have a recovery. Whether we have one or not, we're being told we have a recovery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the numbers are looking like things are better. The Philly Fed this number, and we're looking at the manufacturing number, the ISM. What are we going to do? And they run out, and what do? They start replacing inventory. We get the manufacturing thing going on, and all of a sudden we have this massive run on commodities because we need to juice it up really quickly.
We're not really getting that yet, though. This is the anticipation.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Anticipation of this, right? So what's happening now is everybody's getting really worried. They don't want to miss the boat on the commodities, how cheap it was. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure they don't. What happens if we do have a recovery and they have no inventory? Now, that's a concern. So what's happening now is everything is kind of like one step ahead. And the problem is when we do, in fact, get the next quarter's, or maybe the quarter after, but the next quarter's earnings, and those companies that were in advance of replenishing their inventories, and then all of a sudden they don't have much sales, what's going to happen to the net? That's going to be a problem, right?
Yes, and I see where you go. You know, I think all this manufacturing, everything, and even the market moving higher is pricing in a recovery for early 2010.
Yeah, very
early. Right, so early 2010. But when we get to 2000, what's going to happen when its unemployment rate, well, arguably continues to go higher, right? I mean, we're going to hit between 9 and 10%. We're already at 9.4. I think the White House, the Fed, whatever, puts it at between 9 and 10%. But if we're going to be like that for all of 2010, where's the demand going to come from? I mean, you're going to see that the consumer's getting squeezed. I mean, they're paying higher at the pump now. A lot of people predicting, Goldman's predicting oil at 80. I don't know why anybody would listen to them at 85 when they predicted 200, but that's the benchmark, I guess, now for everything financial. Mm-hmm. Goldman's the benchmark now.
Yeah.
But, you know, higher property taxes. It's just amazing how much costs are going to be a burden to the consumer going forward if that unemployment rate stays above 9% for 2010. Now, if we don't have the recovery, what happens? Well, maybe the stock market goes down, but then you have Mr. Government, right? Then what? You know we're going to announce another stimulus plan, which is going to be great, even though the first one still didn't hit the market. Then we have, you know, maybe another China stimulus plan. Look how great that did. They just showed what you could actually do according to what they report in their numbers, which nobody knows are true. If they are true, then it's working perfectly. But then you're looking at 2011. However, what happens if things just go south to that? Because remember, we're moving higher right now. It is 100% from the government spending. It has nothing to do with the consumer. Right. The consumer's not out there going, the consumer confidence number is up, and I love when you watch on CNBC. Of course they're up. The market's up.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on a second. The consumer confidence numbers that have been up have been broken down into different pieces. One of the things that is up is there's a current situation and a future situation. Mm-hmm. Let's just break it up like that. Mm-hmm. What has really been up is the hope for the future. Mm-hmm. That's really what's been driving consumer confidence because the present condition looks terrible to consumers. I mean, let's be honest. So the problem is it's a little bit skewed. And when you're looking at headlines, and we talk about this, when you're looking at headlines only, you can kind of get sideswiped a little. When you're only looking at the market that it's, you know, let's say today or yesterday or last week, it's up 1% or down 1% or whatever the exact number is on a market itself. That doesn't tell the true story of what's happening underlying the market. No. Individual stocks that got this taken apart or that have done really well.
Absolutely.
So you have to look into it a little bit further to understand it. And that's one of the, I think, the fallacies here. We're looking at kind of headlines a lot of times.
It's true. And all the headlines, it seems like all the headlines are very, very positive lately. And, of course, on the way down, they were very negative. When, again, a lot of that has to do with page views and people want them to view the pages. Obviously, that's a different story.
Right.
But, you know, what can make a dent in this market? And the thing that scares me is money's not for free. This money is coming. How are we going to pay this money back? How all the states are in a, you know, enormous amount of deficits, most of them. Unemployment double digits in a lot of the states now. How are we going to pay this back? And we have to realize we do. Well, you know what? We have cap and trade coming. You know what? That's not a good thing. Okay? We're going to have higher property taxes across the board. How do we have higher property taxes? I mean, think about that. Now, even worse, I mean, what fueled the boom in the first place over the past, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years was housing. I mean, people were able to take all that money out of housing. They were able to get loans and then for nothing, right? Put nothing down. When the home price went up, what did they do? Instead of saying, wow, we're lucky, they took all the equity out of the homes, bought the flat screen TVs, bought the Mercedes and did what they had to do. Now the home prices came down. They don't have that equity and they're not going to have that equity going forward. So we want to see the housing stabilize, right? So there's a lot of people calling a bomb to housing because housing prices are down 40% in some areas. All right, that's fine. A lot of the asset sales are from distressed assets, from foreclosures, you know, short sales. But if you're looking at housing going forward, what scares the hell out of me is rising rates. Mortgage rates are moving up. I mean, what happens if they move up to 6%? We just showed that people would not buy houses unless they were in foreclosure with interest rates that low. Now they're even higher, so now they're not even going to buy the foreclosed property.
Well,
so
wait a minute. Hold on. Let me back you up a little bit here. I mean, it seems like the government is in for... They're not getting out, you know, and they're in for making sure that this thing, whatever this is, whether it's the housing, banking, manufacturing, you know, car business, they're going to do everything they can to make it succeed or at least to backstop everything. So why not, you know, if the government knows that the bonds are naturally going up because people are not buying, you know, we said, listen, Russia came out, mm-hmm. China came out, or at least China intimated, and Brazil did come out and said that they're not going to be basically purchasing U.S. bonds anymore, and they're going to be putting it into this new IMF bond. Mm-hmm. So that we know. Okay, and that kind of messed with the bond market last week, and it's kind of moving all around. But at the same time, you know, the government can actually go, and even though they can't push the Fed funds rates down really, but they can go and artificially buy into the Treasury bond and really squeeze the pricing down dramatically, and that will help the mortgages. But I agree with you, there's just so much they can do. I mean,
how much could you do? I mean, it's already like a Ponzi scheme, right? You're buying long-term bonds to keep interest rates. Well, I mean, it is a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, it definitely
and,
is.
And all Ponzi schemes, like Madoff's Ponzi scheme, was great until it ended.
Right.
So right now, it's great because everybody's making money and the banks are all happy and they think everything is okay. But what happened to the toxic gases? Did they just disappear?
Yes.
They're still on the books.
No, they're gone.
Yeah, they're gone, right? I mean, what happened to them? Gone. So it's interesting to see, and I think, you know, to lead this recovery, it's got to be through banking, and, you know, I think they're on much better footing now thanks to the government. I think the government did a great job stepping in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're prosecuting, you know, this week we saw so much with Ken Lewis. Ken Lewis didn't have a choice, and we were talking about this earlier. When you put yourself in that position where we were, and I think we both got bullish at the same time, which was mid-February. And mm-hmm. I have to say, I was nearly under my desk for those 3 weeks because I was scared to death.
It was a rough time.
In that time, I mean, even though we were bearish well before that, it came to the level where I was like, whoa, okay, now you're getting crazy. I don't think any of us are going to have jobs ever. So in the heat of the moment, and you had Lehman, you had Bear Stearns, and now you had Merrill, I understand what the Fed was doing. I understand what the Treasury is doing. And, I mean, use your common sense. Of course, they told Ken Lewis, hey, listen, we'll do anything you can, just you have to do this deal. I mean, basically, that's what happened, and it made sense when it happened. And now, you know, whatever happens now, and whether it's illegal, whether it's not, but, you know, we stopped the bleeding. Is it good? Yeah, I guess it's good. Who knows what would have happened if Merrill would have went under, too? Who knows? Mm. I mean, would anybody want to own anything financial if that would happen?
Well, I mean still, still to this day, it's pretty spooky because we don't know a lot of the details of the banking industry, even though they say they're doing well and how they changed the mark-to-market, and they changed this, and they changed that. There's all these different accounting rules that were changed.
Why doesn't anybody talk about dilution?
I don't know.
I mean, that's part of the earnings thing. Picture. Did it's you see thing. Anybody want to raise money could raise money. Who's buying?
I don't know. That's an interesting thing because we'll usually get, you know, offers of secondaries and all that. We've seen a few come through.
Uh-huh.
It is amazing how many we've actually seen out in this, you know, just that have been priced that we don't see. But mm-hmm. And I do wonder, where is this money coming from? It's not retail. You cannot tell me that the retail investor is going out and buying a secondary in a bank. I mean, they don't want the firsts. So why are they going to buy the secondaries?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where the money's coming from. It's obviously institutional, and that's good. But the question really is that, you know, you buy a bank or you buy some other industry, you buy a mm-hmm. corporate. I mean, it's a pretty scary situation right now. And even though things are definitely much better, mm-hmm. the question remains, you know, to what level of risk are people willing to take? Is it just so much that they're just throwing it out there? I mean, that's the biggest concern right now is that risk is almost like, you know, nobody cares.
Yeah, people, the more risk, the better off you are. Remember when, what was it, back in February, you couldn't touch a company that had, you know, that didn't have a clean balance sheet.
Right.
Because you were real worried they would go in. And now, the worse the balance sheet, the more higher the stock
is. Oh, yeah, but well, there's a reason. They figure what you'll do is you'll clean up your balance sheet through an offering, let's say, mm-hmm. I assume. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is that the stock will just go up. Look what happened with the REITs, the commercial REITs. We all know that the commercial real estate market is in big, big trouble. I mean, it's been very well told, a story that we all know. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, a company goes out and a commercial real estate company, they come out and they actually do a secondary and it just, the stock goes up 40-50%, Kimco. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to wonder, how is that possible? Well, what they're doing is they're cleaning up their balance sheet. They're taking they're doing a debt for equity swap. Mm-hmm. And people think, well, you know what? You don't have the debt on the books anymore, the crap debt that was on there. And now all of a sudden, you not only do not have the debt, but you don't have to pay on the debt. So you don't have the debt service that you have to pay. And, you know, from there, maybe there's a smooth sailing from there. What other kind of issues do you have? If you have no more debt on your books, you're getting rents in, whatever they are from the various properties. What else do we have to worry about?
Well, it depends if those rents are stable, too.
But even if they're not, the fact of the matter is at least you don't have expenses against them in the form of debt service that you borrowed to leverage yourself up to buy those properties.
Yeah, it's just you don't have 200 million shares outstanding. You have like 900 million shares outstanding.
right, exactly.
So, you know, which is nobody cares about, though. Well, here's right now. But eventually, that's what I'm saying, is eventually you have to care about that stuff. I mean, you have to care about the deficits that are being run right now because, one, the government hasn't stopped yet. They're still backstopping so many different industries, and they're going to backstop commercial real estate. You know they are.
Right.
They just are. It's too big of a market. What is it? Over $3 trillion. I want to say it's more than twice. Huge.
It's big.
Thought subprime was big.
Right.
It's enormous. And, you know, you want to talk about the life, the insurers, too, and how much exposure they have. I mean, you're going to have to backstop that industry as well. But when does it stop? Because eventually we have to pay for this money. That's what cap and trade is definitely going through. It's definitely going through. It's a sure winner for the government. That's definitely going to go through. It's going to cost us more money. And then, through a form of taxes, property taxes, sale taxes, all of this is going to go up. Now, how is a consumer going to react to that when you're seeing, okay, you know, interest rates are moving up. It's getting tight. Credit is kind of tight right now. We're forcing the banks to lend to people that don't deserve to get money. I mean, how insane is that? We're getting mad at the people at the bank saying, you have to lend to these people. And the banks are actually being prudent where I can't lend to someone that has a 500 credit score because it doesn't make sense. And they're right. Like, you should be lending to these people anyway. We need to lend.
Well, I mean, that's what got us into trouble in the first place. So let me ask you something. So with all this being the case and with all these bad pieces of information mm-hmm. and the stock market having a historic, you know, first of historic huge. Downstroke and now a historic mm-hmm. upstroke, what is it that we could say good? Not that I need to find a silver lining. That's not my stick, you know. But what can we say good here? Is there something that is at least looking? We know it's looking better, of course. You're not under the desk, at least, But is it something that we could say that I can kind of grab onto? What is it there that I could say? Okay, I feel comfortable investing in steel companies because we think that long term, they're so low right now, mm-hmm. even though they just came up 25% or 30% or 40%. But still, historically low. The government may be buying trucks. What can we say kind of going forward?
I think going forward, the biggest thing is that the banking industry is stabilized. The financial industry is stabilized. And I think we kind of could agree that it's on much better footing than it was back in March. And I think that's very important. And that's what you want to see. You want to see more lending. They were able to go out and raise money. And I think right now we're on stable footing. But, looking at where stocks went, sure, there's a lot of companies that are doing well. Have all of them should move up like this? No, you could almost pick every single stock, and other than maybe thestreet.com, that has moved up in this huge, huge rally because, they're getting things done right. But it's just, you look at the way the market's trading and you say, okay, now what? I mean, that's the question we have to ask ourselves. Now what? Why would we buy stocks here? What's going to happen? Well, we're going to need to see some earnings, I think, now. We're going to have to see sales higher. There's expectations because this market's all about expectations, and expectations were so low in March, even mm-hmm. last quarter. But right now, they're higher.
Why are they higher?
Because
why?
The stocks are moving higher. There's anticipation that, hey, this stimulus plan is working. Companies linked to China, China's stimulus plan is working. There's this expectation that things are so much better that even in the oil industry or manufacturing or even, retail, that, the consumer's going to be okay in 2010, so they're going to spend more. We're going to need to see the expectations are a lot more high buying at these levels, which means you have to be a little bit more cautious than you've been. It's not going to be an easy road like it was in March, and it's easy to say that in hindsight. And again, we both bought in a little bit earlier than that, which made it nervous, mm-hmm. but it's not going to be as easy where you're seeing companies trading under their cash positions. You saw Massey Energy go from 100 to 10 with a decent balance sheet. You're not going to get those anymore. Now it's at 20, 25 and change or whatever. But you're not really going to get that, so you really have to go into the fundamentals. Make sure you're protected on the downside if you can. You'd like to see maybe insider buy. Imagine seeing insider buys now at these levels after these stocks. How positive is that?
Yeah, if you see it. I mean, obviously, that would be a good thing. And I think the other thing is, though, one of the things that has been really, it's been odd is that the fundamentals, on one hand, haven't mattered as much because you have to do a little bit more thinking into the future.
Absolutely.
So, let me just say something. Let me just restate that. Fundamentals do matter, but I'm just saying what has been occurring. And I will tell you also my feeling is that over time, fundamentals will mean something, and you have to kind of get back to that eventually. Mm-hmm. Right now we're kind of running on a place that we don't know. We've never been here before. We've been in this range before, et cetera, but I think still only a few months ago, we were, kind of in the worst case scenario. Everything was just absolutely negative, pointing down. And now, even though we've recovered a bit, it's only been 2 or 3 months. People are still stung. Mm-hmm. People are still down 40 or 50% of their portfolios, 30, 40, 50, depending on where you are. Some people were lucky enough to grab it on the bottom, but yet at the same time, they kind of, some people got hit pretty hard last year. Mm-hmm. And I think at the same time, you have to wonder, retail started recovering last November. Last November, retail started recovering and really hasn't stopped. Casual dining is going like crazy. And, you have to wonder, what is it that's driving it? Well, it's clearly the expense cutting. It's the cost of actual products are lower, the deflationary environment that we're in.
We also underestimated how easy it is to cut costs within that
right.
particular industry.
Exactly.
I think that's what because you're looking at it, was Chico's. I mean, these companies mm-hmm. are up like four. They're not even double. They're up like triple,
right.
quadruple.
Right.
But I think it's a lot easier to cut costs in that environment where, if you're giving away like 3-for-1 specials like Joseph A. Banks that gives you like 2 ties, 3 suits for the price of one, you're going to get a line outside your door. And you know what? That's better than not having anybody there.
Right.
And I think when they said that, they're like, okay, at least we have you know, we're seeing sales, fine, we'll take the hit on margins. But I think, you know, we underestimated in that industry how quick they could get out of their inventory when you really discount. And maybe that's why that industry saw a huge, huge increase.
Well, let's also talk about the reality here. And really, you need to, what we need to think about is how disposable the human being is right now. That's what the first cost cut and the most incredible cost cut was the human. And what happened maybe back in the 80s, 70s, and all the years before that, maybe it was much more important to keep people working, and now there's not that much care. Maybe that's why the numbers are, you know, the continuing claims are at such a high level, why the unemployment rate is at the highest it's been in 25 years. Mm-hmm. And potentially the question then remains, you know, does that come around and bite us in the ass on the back end?
That's a good question. And again, when are we going to see this an improvement in this? You know, I mean, we were under the impression, right, 6 months ago that, you know, 2009, at the end of 2009, you know, we'll be seeing, you know, unemployment get better. We've seen the employment picture get better. And now when the White House came out and said, well, it's going to be through 2010, you have guys like Muhammad Al-Arian, somebody I respect a lot, saying it's a different world. It is a different world right now. It's not the world of easy credit, at least for now. It could last for the next 5 or 10 years. It is going to be a different world, and I think you have to adjust to that, where, you know, disposable income and discretionary spending, you know, that's going to go down dramatically, I think, because you're seeing, like, the hit people took in the 401ks, which is still down a lot, you know, as you mentioned before. Also, you know, your home values are down tremendously still, even if they do stabilize here. And, you know, that hit to your wealth really hurts, and that is going to make an impact going forward. We're not going to see housing prices double anytime soon. We're not even going to see them go up 15, 20% anytime soon. That's going to be a huge impact, I think, on a consumer going forward, because not only is their wealth lower, they feel like it is. Yeah. I mean, they bought the houses. They were just told, what was it, 18 months ago, their house, say, was worth $400,000, is worth like $280,000,
right.
$270,000. Think about that.
Well, they feel trapped. They feel very trapped.
So, you know, it, psychologically, you're like, wow, you know what? We got to really start saving more, you know, mm-hmm. even if you don't need to. And that's what's going on, I think.
Well, let's talk about some of the economic points. I thought that it would be really interesting to talk about, you know, what we should be looking at. What are some of the things that are meaningful, what aren't? You know, because I think there's a lot of reaction going on right now to, again, headlines, and really without understanding what those mean, you know, you can misinterpret those. And as an investor and understanding the long-term trends and you know, if putting aside the green shoots, the mustard seeds and all these nice things, those are great, mm-hmm. you know, and they feel good and it's, you know, going to get better and, you know, kind of yeah. But let's talk about what some of these things mean, okay? So we put together a little bit of a top economic data points that we can talk about. And I thought we'd kind of just go down this list and talk about some of the importance, what to look for, and maybe kind of say what's not as important. But let's start with the employment situation, because that's what we talked about. You know, it comes out, there's a lot of different employment numbers that come out, right? So we have the initial claims that are on Thursdays. You know, once a month we have the employment situation that comes out. We have non-farm payrolls that come out. Mm-hmm. We have also in between there, we have other ones like the ADP employment report. So what do you look at? What do you think is important in this whole?
You know, believe it or not, and people who have listened to my podcast in the past are going to laugh, but, you know, I used to hate the ADP data. I used to tell everybody, don't. It's meaningless.
It was so new.
But you know what it was? They restructured it right. To the point, and now when you take the revised estimates, which get revised 2 or 3 times now, it seems like, with the unemployment numbers, by the time you take the revised estimates, it almost comes in line with ADP, which is now finally, I think, they fixed it to the point where it works. But with the employment situation, I think it's important to use on a weekly basis. I would use initial claims, and we're seeing continuing claims continue to hit records. That is not right. Good. That means people are having a lot of trouble finding jobs right now,
mm-hmm.
and that's the key indicator. Now, as for the number, the actual number, 9.4%, psychologically, yes, that's horrible. I mean, we could see that go up, and you know, maybe the claims go down, and people looking at claims to go, you know, under 500,000, 400,000 without the birth death. Impact.
Right.
So, you know, you could take everything combined, but I really like to look at a week-to-week basis now, because it just seems like it gives me more of an accurate read, and that continuing claim numbers, that's something I like to look at. I would love to see it stabilize already.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw last week a number of like right over 600,000. Everybody was all excited that it's down 21,000. Now, 21,000 differential when you're talking about 600,000. Mm-hmm. Clearly not 675 anymore. It's not 650, not 620. It's 6. And I agree that it's going the right direction. No question about that. But let's not get caught up in the minutia of $1,000 or $2,000, even a $5,000 differential between, you know, period to period. But more so, I think, look at the trend. Would you agree with that?
Agree with that. Hey, let me put this in perspective. Remember maybe 12 months ago, maybe 14 months ago, remember when it went from like 35 to 45,000? And mm-hmm. that was an enormous deal. Wow.
Right.
It was 45,000 job losses. It was supposed to be 35. Now we're looking at 500,000 to 600,000. Even if that number is 300,000, it's a terrible number. I mean, eventually we're going to get to 300,000. I think coming in, I really do think that we're going to see much better numbers on an individual, you know, on the jobless claims front. But it's still an enormous number, and we are, you know, if you want to call it by definition, by far, we're in a bull market, right? Mm-hmm. The 20% rise, and for us to get to be in a bull market, how can we be in a bull market if we're losing jobs? It just doesn't
I like to
sense.
Look at it a little different way. We're not in a bull market. We're not in a bear market. We're just starting over. I mean, we got rid of the February down, March down. You know, we're kind of like, you know, beyond, we're kind of like starting over in 2009.
I like to get a couple of those after I argue with my wife.
Yeah.
Start over, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, like, but hey, that makes sense, though. That makes sense, like to start over.
Exactly.
Now, but, you know, by the definition, we're in a bull market. But how can we be in a bull market when all the spending that's being done, everything is being done by the government? That's what's inflating the market. And, you know, the banks are benefiting. And hopefully, they'll you know, most of them be able to pay back TARP, so they say. But, yeah, it's just interesting going forward here.
Well, let's talk about don't get me started with TARP. I don't want to talk about it. It gets my head like dizzy, and I get really not only upset, I get like violent. I got to tell you something. You know, the whole idea of paying.
But TARP is great. We're using it for
loans?
No, not only loans. We just got raised to like the level 6 thing that you were talking about. Your favorite
story. Oh, the swine flu?
We were putting money from TARP into swine flu. Aren't we a couple billion dollars or something like that?
I mean, wasn't that
for the banks?
Well, it'd be better because instead of using the TARP money to pop the futures in the morning and screw everybody along the way, maybe that's a better thing we could do. Good idea. Good point.
Okay.
Consumer prices, producer prices. One of the things that's been really, I mean, the dollar has been so overwhelming mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, what's happening with pricing, what's happening with commodities. You know, the dollar's been just smashed to smithereens over the last however long it's been, years, 2 years. When we talk about PPI, which is it's kind of the prices and the inflation on the wholesale side of things, mm-hmm. right? And the CPI, which is really the inflation number that we look at. Do you find that to be an important issue? And what do you look at there?
You know, it's funny because, again, we'll go back 18 months and these were the two biggest gauges that everybody used to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Even more important than unemployment. And now they're kind of meaningless because the inflation is not showing up on the figures, okay? And it makes sense. I mean, we look at where houses are going, even wages, and we're seeing a lot of things that aren't inflationary things. And that leads to so many people in The Economist who have been in the business for 40 years, they read their textbooks and say, well, there's no inflation. I don't care what you call it. You can call it whatever the hell you want. I don't care. People are paying more. The cost of living now is more expensive than it was, and it's getting higher month after month after month. I don't care if that's called inflation or not. It's not a good thing. But as for the CPI and the PPI, right now, you know, I'm not going to look at the CPI, I don't know how you feel, and say, wow, I'm going to trade off of it and could buy a couple of stocks.
Right.
I don't think those two gauges right now mean anything because they're not going to show any signs of inflation. And right now, I don't think we're seeing – I think we're out of the stages of being, you know, deflation as well.
Well, I agree. I mean, you have let's put it this way. Gas is up. Commodity prices up. My son went to ice skating camp. It was three times what it was 3 years ago. Costs are up across the board. Yeah, sure, it's cheaper to lease money, if you will, or borrow money. Mm-hmm. But really, generally speaking, I don't know too many things that have gone down in price over the last year. Do you?
No. I mean, you look at all your bills, you look at everything. I mean, even your cell phone bills. I mean, at least now you could probably fight for things because mm-hmm. they're losing so many customers. But they're trying to raise the cost of everything. Your cable bill is higher, electricity bill. I mean, electricity, I think, finally came down a little bit. But still, going forward, cap and trade, forget it. You know, it's going to force a lot of these companies to raise prices on electricity.
Yep,
so
exactly.
Going forward, yeah, we're just seeing the cost rise, the cost of living rise.
Yep. All right, let's skip down to let's go down to retail sales because that's been something of interest. And one of the things you get this headline number and it says retail sales up or down, whatever it is. We saw last week that China actually came out with their, I think it was retail sales in China. It was like up 25% for the period, 1 month. we're not anywhere near that, obviously, and that's pretty unbelievable. And if that's not inflationary and runaway craziness, I don't know what it is. And it wasn't from a low number, by the way. Okay, so I guess when the government's giving out money and they go and buy jewelry, that was a big thing in China, a lot of jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the story with retail sales? I mean, is it truly the gauge of the consumer these days, or it has gas? Last week it was up because of gasoline and building materials, but when it came to apparel and dining and all that, whatever, all the other components were all down. Mm-hmm. So is that something we should pay attention to?
The markets move on it, yeah. So I'd say, yeah, we would pay attention to it. Is an accurate gauge of if the consumer is spending? I don't know if I would go there. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of different components to it. You look at the gas factor, and they do report this ex-gas. But, you know, it's a very difficult gauge. It really is. Like, I find that to question myself on retail sales because Also, going forward, if you look at Walmart, Walmart doesn't report monthly sales anymore.
Yeah, they stopped it.
Which I think every single company should do, because why? I mean, monthly, fine. If you're a trader, you want to see it monthly. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, but truthfully, as an accurate gauge of a business, I mean, in a month, who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, 3 year trucks, they got flat tires and then deliver stuff. Who knows? It's a month.
Right.
You know, so really, I think quarterly would be better, but it's going to be interesting to see retail sales now that Walmart's out of that. I believe Walmart's now out of that gauge. So you're seeing huge negatives on it. Ex Walmart, and Walmart is obviously like the largest retailer. So going forward, you know, you obviously want to see this tick up, and it does move the markets. But I don't know if it's an accurate gauge to say, oh, all of retail is back, because I think you really, especially retail, you have to go on an individual level, because there's some companies out there that are getting it done, and some that don't deserve to be trading at the prices that they're trading at.
Right. No, I agree with that. I mean, some of the retail is a little absurd. I agree with that. Consumer sentiment. There's a couple different consumer sentiments that are out there. University of Michigan comes out on Fridays once a month, and they're a pretty good one of the standards. There's a few others that have been out there as well. But, you know, is consumer sentiment, you know, that ties into consumer sales, retail sales, that ties into present condition, as we talked about, ties up, you know, the future opportunity of what's going to happen. How do we look at this? I mean, is it something?
I would almost look at it, I don't know, you can look at it as that contrarian indicator, I think. As this goes higher, I think I might be more of a seller than a buyer as this goes higher, because, you know, it is a lagging indicator. It's not too hard to predict that consumer confidence is going to be up. Look at the three, we just had the greatest 3 month period almost in our history, at least in our lifetimes.
Right.
I'm confident, I'm happy, and I don't even have a job, and I'm happy. But, you know, obviously these numbers are going to be much better than expected. As far as sentiment index, I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, look at the home builder sentiment. It was 9.
Right.
On a scale of 1 to 100, it was 9. I mean, unless, and I even said this, unless everybody who took the survey said I'm jumping out the window, it couldn't get worse than that.
Right.
And then when it went to 16, the headlines, as you love, which we always go over, you know, it surged. It surged to 16. It's right. A gauge from 1 to 100. So sentiment, you have to be a little careful. We're still not at the normal levels on consumer confidence that you want to be, where, you know, which would be like a bull market.
Right, or expansionary.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so oil and gas inventories, that has been making it's been real trouble, right? So we've had, I mean, unbelievable. There's a couple different ones that come out, but look at the main ones. And there was, what we look for really is how much oil is being added to the stockpiles, or how much the stockpiles are being dropped, right? Mm-hmm. And lately what we saw was, 1 week we saw just an amazing drop in crude inventories, and then we look at distillates, and we look at the gas, et cetera. And then the next week, all of a sudden, there was a big, you know, increase, and there was all of a sudden a gigantic surplus. And the next week, again, it was this big drawdown. So when there's a drawdown, they say, oh, well, you know, big uses of gasoline, and that's great for the economy. There's things that are going on between shipping and trucking and cars and everything else. On the other hand, how do we have 1 week up, 1 week down? I mean, how are we supposed to reconcile this?
I think we can count that better than some of the people that do. I mean, now all of a sudden, I think they just raised a demand forecast and saying that demand's going to be much stronger. But it seems like the higher the supply goes, the more you should be buying. I mean, if you did that if you employ that strategy, then definitely you'd be up a lot of money. So it's very difficult. I think we still have an enormous amount of supply, and people are going to be quick to point out to the rigs, which we have half the rigs, and we're cutting down dramatically. And I see that, and I get that. And I know natural gas is going to go higher because they're going to say, well, the ratio, the oil to nat gas ratio should be, you know, whatever the ratio is. And maybe if you want to trade nat gas. I do know we almost have more water. I mean, more nat gas than water.
Yeah, no, the supplies are unbelievable.
The supplies are unbelievable in nat gas. I mean, as much as you want, here you go, it's yours. As oil, yeah, you know, there are a lot of supplies, and you know, we're talking about an environment where demand is actually being, you know, is actually shrinking. But you know what? If demand does pick up, which we're anticipating, because the supplies are being cut so much and so dramatically, you know, it'll be interesting to see. And one point I did make, which I made on my podcast last week, is you look at ExxonMobil, they just did with Imperial Oil, which is a subsidiary of theirs, they just did a huge $8 billion project there in the works for oil sands. Now, for oil sands to work and make it economic sensible, oil has to be pretty much the lowest point from all the research I've done is $60. So they're saying that oil is going to be $60, or they were not going to put money into an $8 billion project, even though it's probably pennies to them.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes to show you that maybe, you know, the demand is there. They see demand. And if you want to listen to forecasts, go and read the annual report. They forecast out to for ExxonMobil. They forecast out to 2030. And it's amazing. It's nice to see somebody run a business on what their expectations are 10 years from now and not 3 months.
Right. Most companies don't have visibility past next week.
Yes. And it's nice to see that they're basically saying, I don't care what anyone thinks the next 3 months. And it's so funny how they complain about Tillerson's, you know, pay package. And yet the guy, I mean, look at the profits that are coming in at mobile. I mean, and you know, you're not going to complain about the financial industry. Anyway, that's another story.
Yeah. So now, let's just state this. There's people on one side to say that, you know, there's no drawdown, the supplies, which they are, by the way. The supplies are the highest they've been in years. In other words, the strategic oil reserves plus as well the surplus that we have right now. Yeah, and week to week, you can't look at them. Again, I think the discussion here and the common thread to all of these are that I like to look at is the trend. You know, not get caught up in a conversation agreed to, not get caught up in the headlines saying surging, not get caught up in, you know, any of the other minutiae about this, but look at the trend over time to see how things are either getting better or worse. Now, of course, need to be sometimes quick because, you know, if you see a trend reversing dramatically, just like in a, you know, a stock, let's say, or something else, that when it comes to financial instruments, you know, you need to kind of be aware of that. So that's the kind of things you need to keep paying attention to, not just what came out today versus last week versus the week before, because you got to look at the trend of those times, I think, are the most important.
Yes.
Let's finish up on a couple of places that we can look for this data. You know, one of the things that people can do, I like to, things like briefing.com. I think you and I talked about great site. There's a free and paid content there. Calendars, economic data. St. Louis Fed has information, raw data, as well as an email service. Again, free. And there's freelunch.com, which is also economy.com. That is also dismal.com, their pay site. And you can find not only raw economic data there, but you can also find a lot of research and discussion about what the numbers mean and the expectations of what happened, plus a breakdown of what each of the pieces meant, because that's really important when it comes to these very, you know, some of the components of like a retail sales, as we've been saying, are multitudes of data that are piled together to get a data point. You know, you get like 10 pieces of data that come together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that the bottom line is that these three, anything, what sites do you like to go to or what do you like to look at?
You know what? I use pretty much, you can find the data anywhere you want. I would just go simply to Yahoo Finance. That's mm-hmm. free. You can go there, look at the economic calendar. And when you look at it for people who don't really look at a top-down approach or look at the economy, or maybe the traders out there and they're starting to look at the economy, because it's very important, just like, you know, economists are now looking to be traders these
days.
But I think it's important to break down the data. The economy is about us. It's about people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it's about. If you look outside and you see a for sale sign house and how many are on the block, you
right.
know, translate that into, you know, housing sales, you know, existing housing sales. Are they selling? Well, you see, you know, your neighbor's house is 3 for sale for like 8 months.
Right.
So you know the market's bad. So you're going to see that reflected in the figures. Retail sales, when you go to your malls, I know it's, you know, people like to go to one mall and think that that's what's happening every place on the planet.
Right.
But, you know, see what stores and not just the people in the stores, see who has bags that are buying things and translate that into retail sales. Wow, it seems like a lot of more people are going out there. Maybe they just got their tax checks. If you can relate that into the economy, because I'm a firm believer that anyone who was an economist was able to see this coming.
Oh, but they didn't, did they?
I think the average individual investor knew how tough it was and how hard it was out there. And the economists did not get it. They just did not get it. I don't know if they're locked in a room or whatever with data sheets. I don't know. But it seems like when you're in the economy, you see how tough things are and the cost of the way you live and what you do with your kids rises, and you see that, you're like, wow, things are so bad.
Yeah,
everybody
yeah,
on TV yeah. is telling you great. You know why? Because everybody on TV is a multimillionaire and has 7 houses. And they're like, I don't see the housing market going down because there's a line just to get into the neighborhood
right.
where they live.
Right.
So, you know, you have to relate to yourself, and that's a good way, that's a good gauge if you're not interested in the economy, because believe me, you would have... We would create so many ideas for yourself
mm-hmm.
if you could have that macro approach and combine it with like a trading approach. Believe me, the amount of ideas and you'll be so far ahead of this market. And that translates into good performance, which was evident with, you know, stocks under 10.
Yep,
I mean, who would have thought stocks under 10, you use like a top-down approach? But it works. It really does work.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's interesting. Sometimes it works. Let's also say sometimes it works and sometimes it works, but not at the exact time that you're working with it.
It's tough to do timing.
You know, that sometimes is very difficult. You know, one of the things that we look at is why are the economics saying this, but something else is happening? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, that's the whole discussion we have with regard to, you know, fundamentals, but yet we have to be in advance of that. That doesn't mean stampede in or out of anything, but at the same time, it means, you know, being advanced of that. So let's talk about this for one more minute about stocks under 10. So you have a real passion for that, and, you know, obviously there's no magic. The stock is $10 or less. It gets your attention for further analysis. I mean, that's the first breakdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously there was a lot more of a universe a few months ago than there is now.
And I was very, very quick to point that out, where I think it was 24% of the S&P 500 was trading under 10.
Oh,
that's why in February, rough. I became extremely, 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 extremely bullish.
Yep, yep. And then it 3 more weeks later, they still were more.
They were a little bit more cheaper. But, and then I was a little more bearish.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, wait a minute, what am I doing to these people? Yep. But it turned out to be, in the portfolio, we had 5 stocks that are up more than 100%, 1 stock up more than 300%.
Wow.
So, I mean, to take advantage of it and to be bullish at the right time really helped. And, the performance mattered. And I like to look at it as a mutual fund because that's kind of how I run it. I ran it as a model portfolio. And if you look at it and I compared the 1 year performance, I would have been ranked number 11 in my class out of 700 mutual funds.
Wow.
And out of 600 mutual funds in 3 year performance, the top performance was plus 4%, and I was plus 16%.
Wow, that's great.
So I would have been ranked number one out of every single mutual fund over 3 year performance. And the way you do that is you limit. You have to, when I look at these stocks first, Andrew, I see how much I could lose. Because mm-hmm. the good story is already there. I mean, everybody could give you a story about every stock. I think it's very important to look at these stocks and say, okay, what's the downside risk and go from there? That's your starting point. Start from there, and I think you do.
Which brings us all the way around to the concern that there is for today. The downside risk, let me think through, see if you agree with this. The downside risk is that short term we can see a pullback because just the standard nature of stocks are that they move. They consolidate, they pull back, they move, they consolidate, pull back in whatever direction that may be. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really seen that a true consolidation pullback yet. We've seen some consolidations, but not really a pullback yet. And, the concern is you buy a stock that moved up. Now, maybe it deserves to be a lot higher one day, maybe. Mm-hmm. But the problem is going to be how much pain you're going to have between now and that point, right? So you buy it today, let's just say, as a number 20. It was 10, now it's 20. Maybe one day, way back when, it was 100. That could come back down to 15, and that's a pretty severe loss. And the question is, can you handle that? And is that something you want to do? Is it something, or would you rather wait and risk not getting in if it starts to move higher? Isn't that the point?
It is the point. One thing that I look at with stocks, no matter what stock it is, when you buy it, you have a thesis, right? Why you bought it. Whatever it is, whatever trading strategy, say if you like it for certain reasons. If those reasons happen and the stock goes up, say, 100%, see what's changed about the stock to make you to continue to hold it. Now, right now, I could say that about 4 or 5 of my stocks that were in the Stocks Under 10 portfolio. And you know what? Under normal circumstances, I would have sold them because the thesis played out as I outlined. But you know why I held them? Because this is one of the biggest momentum markets. I have no idea where Massey Energy was going to go. I have no idea where Ashland that I bought at 7 was going to go to 30. I thought at 18, I was like, wow, this is great. You know what? I'm keeping about a 40% position on, and I'm letting it ride because we're in a momentum market. And sure enough, where do we go from 16 to 30? So you really we're in a different market. What has changed in that time frame? Well, when I first bought Ashland, we weren't in a momentum market. We were in more like a valuation. You really had to look at the balance sheet, look what's going on. Was it unfairly punished? And then when the stock hit 16 at a price where I was like, okay, I think I'm out of the stock, you reevaluate the market and why you bought it. And when I reevaluated, I said, you know what? This is a momentum stock. The fundamentals are still intact. They came out with a great, great quarter. They showed integration of one of their past acquisitions, and it already hit the bottom line. It's starting to hit the bottom line. So a lot has changed. You look at it, you analyze it, you say, okay, this is what, the story's changed a little bit. It's still intact, but you know what? Look at the momentum stocks continue to run. There's no way I could sell my full position here. Could you take profits? Absolutely take profits. You want to book those profits. Buy your kids a toy or something, a bike, whatever it is.
Right.
But you know what? Let them run because that's what the don't try to be so much ahead of the market. I mean, the market's there for you to see, to read. And right now it's telling you, buy momentum stocks. That's what I'm telling you. Don't fight it. Mm-hmm. Don't fight it.
No, I agree. And the one thing that, we run a little bit of a different situation because, you're recommending and then people do what they want with it. And, we had a pretty good year last year. This year's been very lopsided. It's just we're not getting a lot of momentum here, although we didn't have any losses to speak of either. I find it to be a very ponderous kind of time. And I don't know if I'm, we're pretty long, generally speaking, in our portfolios, but I don't know. It's just not feeling right. You know what I'm saying? Something's just not. That doesn't mean we're not going to stay with momentum if it goes that direction. And we found, for example, we recently picked up a steel company that deals with the automobile industry because we believe that the government's going to be, flushing that with a lot of money. And that's great, but there's going to be some volatility there. There's going to be. That's why you pick up smaller positions. Mm-hmm. You don't have, watch your sizing. That's a big issue. The other thing is that you can't hold on for dear life either, even if your thesis is right. Mm-hmm. I think that you have to kind of set up some stops and kind of,
absolutely.
Be able to walk
away.
We
didn't even talk about the downside, and you hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. Yep. Even if sometimes your thesis, you're like, okay, this makes sense, and the stock just comes even further lower.
So. Yeah. So listen, let's wrap up and let me tell us again where people can get in touch with you, and then you're going to give them information about what your next stage is, and the people that have currently subscribers to yours, you can figure out what to do. With stocks under 10 or whatever's going on with that. I don't even know, but whatever it is. Tell us again how they can get in touch with you.
Thank you. It's curzio1 at gmail.com, C-U-R-Z-I-O-1 at gmail.com. I would know in 3 weeks exactly what is going on. Also, you could. I'm on Facebook. I'm actually going to be on Twitter, so feel free to contact me. I want to hear from you. And again, I really, really appreciate the comments, and I appreciate coming on the show, Andrew. I love to come to the show. I'll come on every single week if you want me to.
You're the best.
You know, and I enjoyed it. I think you do a great job.
Thanks so much. All right, listen, gang, check it out. We'll put the information on the website so you can find out where he is. So you just click and go there. Go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check out the show notes for this particular episode, episode number 113. And make sure that you have a good week, a safe week. Maybe it's a time to hedge the portfolio, take some profits, as Frank had been mentioning there. And be careful, because a lot more coming, I think, when it comes down to the next stage of the earnings season, which is going to be here, in a few weeks, I guess. So, you know, make sure to check out the site there. We'll be having information as well. And we'll see you soon. Have a great week. Andrew Horowitz signing off the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks a lot.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.